Hi everyone, I'm Suzanne Ricci, the Chief Success Officer at Computer Coach, and you're tuning into Talent Acquisition Talks, where job seekers get real-world advice from the top talent acquisition professionals, recruiters, career coaches, resume writers, and more. I'm asking the questions that you want the answers to, so let's get to it. We're here today with Jane Barr of Connection. Jane, it's so great to have you here. Thanks for coming on today.
Great to be here. I'm delighted and honored to be here.
Jane, you're an executive coach, and Connection is your company that you help particularly women change their career paths. Tell us, how did you get started?
I was a consultant to the retail industry for about 30 years, doing business process reengineering for retailers like Gap and CVS, REI. Well, one day I'm working on a project and I realized I'm the oldest person on this project. Even the team lead, which I normally would have been, now is a guy who's about 10 years younger than me. And one day I'm sitting in my cubicle creating flowcharts. Well, flowcharts is something I did when I was first starting out. So obviously I'm not really excited about this where I am at that moment. But the team lead comes up and says that we've got a new technical lead coming in, and I want her to sit where you are, and I want you to pack up your things and move to the office back in the warehouse. Yuck.
So it's
fun. Yeah. And I, at that point, realized I was in trouble. And I needed to get some help. So I went to a coach, and literally within about 3 months, my career started to turn around. I went out on a speaking engagement for the company I had been consulting to. And the next project I was on, I was put in charge of a section of where we were re-engineering all of the systems for the company. And the next time I was put on a project where I was leading the project and I was making almost twice what I was making before. So I understood and still understand the power of having a coach behind you. And I decided at that point that that was what I was going to start doing, because I see so many women, especially in the technology field, get to a place in their career where they are stuck, or where they get sidelined, and it's simply not necessary.
And so Connection is a career executive coaching platform, is that?
That's right. Most of my clients are leaders in mid-management up into the executive level who have gotten to that place in midlife. Some of my clients are in their early 30s, but the vast majority of my clients are in their 40s and 50s that hit that wall, if you will, where they're not progressing and they need to re-engineer their career.
Well, I'm excited to have this conversation today, especially knowing that, because one of the questions I get asked quite a bit is about ageism and how can candidates overcome ageism in the workplace. I'm really excited about this conversation. Let's talk about career planning. We'll start with that. Why is it important to have a career plan?
Not having a career plan is probably easier to talk about. It's a little bit like sitting in your driveway and not having a plan, and then you take off and you don't know where you're going to end up. I mean, you can take any kind of road, and you may be very, very lucky and end up in a job that's really interesting to you. But if you don't have a plan, the chances are that you are going to end up at the dump. And obviously, that's not where you want your career to go.
No, that's probably not where anybody wants their career to go. So if somebody doesn't have a career plan, when can they start planning? Like, when's the right time? If I didn't plan and I get to 40, 45, what do I do?
The right time to create a plan when you hit 40 or 50 and things aren't going as well as you had hoped is to do it when you start to get a sense that things are not going right. I know a lot of people come to me when they have been working in a dead-end job for 3, 5, 7 years. And now they've lost their self-confidence. And they start to think in terms of, you know, am I too old to do something new or different? Am I, you know, are people going to even want me? And so they get to a place where they there can also be very desperate feeling. And I get it, because ageism in the workplace is very real. On the other hand, the earlier you can start that planning, is as soon as you sense that things aren't going right. An example. There's a big new piece of software out and everybody's learning it and you don't get invited to the training. Or your boss starts calling in all the younger people to meetings and you don't get invited. So things like that start to happen. They're fairly obvious, but people just sort of in the beginning kind of have a tendency to push them aside and sort of work harder and do more. And then they wonder why they're exhausted and stressed out. And if we would stop when we start to feel that way and say, what's going on? Do I need to shift my plan, my strategy for my career and start at that point? Then everything else works out a lot easier for them.
I love those examples. They are very real examples that candidates need to be self-aware of and really notice what's going on around them. And those are two very real examples that happen to quite a few people. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times I don't feel like candidates pick up on them, or they take too long to pick up on them. And I would say if you see that happening to you three times in the workplace, that's a pretty good indicator that you should probably start looking at your career plan. So let's talk about what should be included in a career plan.
I actually have a 10-step process that I use, and it starts with working on self-doubt, because the problem with jumping, what a lot of people tend to do is jump right to the resume. I need a job. I need to put myself out there. But if you're not feeling self-confident or have doubts, then you're going to err on the side of extreme conservatism, or you might go back and write a resume based on where you've been and not what's possible for you. And so that's where I start. And then we look at who are you now, because what you wanted when you were 20 is not what you want when you're 40 or 50. And when you're 20, you're just fresh starting out. When you're in the 30s, maybe you have a family or other kind of financial obligations. When you're in your 40s and your 50s, you're seeing all of those change, and what your needs are different. And a lot of times what I find with my clients is that before, their whole focus was on making more money, making more progress. And at 40s and 50s, people start to think in terms of, where do I get back? Where can I make a real difference, have a solid impact? And that becomes foremost. And so we walk through all of those, you know, who do I serve? Where do I want to have an impact? What's the environment I want to be in? And then when we walk through that and get really solid about it, then I ask for somebody to come in and help them with their branding, because that's not my specialty. I get them to the place where they can have all the information to write a brand and to write the resume.
Great stuff. And I think that is so important to understand that it's okay if you want to change your path. Just because what you've done, I love the way you said it, what you have done in the past doesn't mean that's all that's possible, right? There's so many transferable skills and different ways that you can go in your career. And I think a lot of times candidates don't realize that there are so many opportunities, even in as simple as changing the job title, right? There's so many job titles out there that do the same exact roles in various companies that even just by changing your job title, you could get into a smaller company if you've been in a bigger company. And maybe mm-hmm. a smaller company is where you want to be today, because you'll be able to wear more hats and contribute more. So there's so many great possibilities out there. And I love the way you said that. What advice would you have for our listeners if they find themselves in this situation, want to make a change, or they are looking at their plan, or maybe they, like we just said, they get that third time where they weren't invited to the meeting? What's their first step?
Well, if it really is ageism, and I think they have to look at it in two aspects. One is the reality of the marketplace. Oftentimes, people are working for very large companies. And the process that large companies tend to use is they hire a lot of people right out of college, and then that filters down. So if you think about it, a large company might hire 200-300 people every year. But by the time those people are going to be in upper management, that's filtered down to less than 1% of that group. And if they're doing that every year, you have to know realistically that you may or may not fit into what they're planning. And it doesn't have anything to do with who you are, how skilled you are, what kind of a person you are. It's just how companies operate. And so if you're aware of that, that sort of starts to help you recognize that you are just fine, and that it has nothing to do with you. It's a process. The other thing then you have to look at is when you're 40s and 50s, like we talked before, is that your life has changed. And oftentimes people will cling to a job. I have one client right now that said, somebody came up to her and told her that they thought she was burnt out. That's really common, because people do get burnt out. We lose our energy. We lose the interest in what we're doing. I remember that I had been doing systems for retailers for almost 30 years. And it got to a place where all these people were so excited about this new system and all the widgets and gadgets. And I went, it's the same thing. I've been doing it for 30 years. It just has a new this or that. And I realized at that point that I wasn't excited about this anymore. And when you lose your enthusiasm for what you're doing, your real enthusiasm, not fake, when you lose that, people read that, and that can really bring your whole career down. So it's actually an advantage if you stop and rethink what you're doing and look for whatever it is that gives you energy again.
Great stuff. I think, you know, when you first brought up that your candidate had been told she was burnt out, the first thing that I thought of was, well, that's quite a microaggressive statement, right? And but then at the same time, after hearing the entire situation, I thought to myself, well, you know what? Maybe that colleague was doing her a favor, because maybe that was the reality she needed to realize, you know what? I'm not excited. And clearly she sought out a coach, and I'm sure she's on her path to doing something that makes her excited if she has you on her side. So let's switch paths a little, and we'll talk about implementing the plan, right? So there's this 10-step process you have for creating the career plan. Let's talk about innovative ways that candidates can source job opportunities that make them excited. So here's one of the things that we're talking about, ageism. I get told all the time when my candidates or my customers who are, you know, over, and we'll say their late 40s and up, applying on job boards is a dead end for them. Why? There's so many tells on your resume, on your age and how much experience you have. And there's so many different things on a resume that really makes older job seekers uncomfortable. So what are some innovative ways that they can source open job opportunities that will make them excited, that isn't necessarily using an Indeed or a Career Builder or something like that?
The most important thing people can do, obviously, at least it's obvious to me, is to build a network. Misconception about networks is very real. What people have a tendency to do is think, I need to find a new job. I better go out and network and look. So what they tend to do is look for companies where they want to work. or might want to work, or look for where there are job openings, and then start to look for who they know at those companies so that they can network with them. That's a good tactic. Don't get me wrong. That is. Unfortunately, there's not enough time in there for trust to have been built up. So the most important thing anybody can do for their career, seriously, the most important thing they can do for their career is to start building a network as early as possible in their career. And it's not a network of just anybody. It's a network of people that you would really like to work with. And then keep up with that network, because gosh, it's fun. I know that sounds crazy, but actually it is fun. It's fun to, you know, get together with people for coffee, find things that might be interesting to those people and email or text them about it, invite them to events where you think that they might be interested, because having that kind of a network over time builds trust. And then when you are in a situation where you feel that you need to get out and find work, you have an incredibly strong network of people to tap into. And those are the people you want to work with. And those are also people who are probably working in companies where you would like to work. And third, they trust you. And so they're more likely to recommend you.
Sure, because they didn't just meet you. That's very real. A lot of candidates think, oh, I'm job searching. I have to get out and I have to start networking today. What events can I go to? But your points are really valid, is that you should already have a network. And if you don't have a network, trying to scurry to get one together quickly could negatively impact your career. It's always alarming to me when I ask somebody about their former employment and they tell me they can't talk to any of their former colleagues, or they don't talk to any of their former colleagues. So I think people really need to understand the value of networking and how it compounds over time, right? The value of your network. Yeah. So let me ask you, what are some ways that you use to build your network? And I just had this question last night. Somebody asked me, Suzanne, people you don't know that aren't in your network that you haven't talked to, you know, several times already, what techniques do you use to get them to have coffee with you? You know, you brought up a great point of inviting people to other events, which I think a lot of times people don't think of, right? If you have an event that you're going to, you want to add somebody to your network, call them up, send them an email, invite them to go with you, right? Everybody loves to get an invitation. But what innovative ways do you have for somebody to add individuals into their network if they're not already in there?
Well, obviously going to an event. And if you're going to any kind of event, whether it's a live event or a virtual event, the goal being not to come away with, you know, 20 new business cards, but to come away with one, maybe two people that you've gotten to know a little bit on a personal level. And once you make that personal connection, find some common ground, then it's a lot easier and more fun to want to get together with people that you know. And then to find ways, very simple ways, to just stay in contact with them, because people are busy. They don't have time to go everywhere. And so sending out a note about the industry, or if you're reading the paper and you notice that there is something about them in the paper, you know, sending them a note. One of the things I try to do is recognizing that people are busy, is to do that, send out notes, and then systematically, and I know that maybe that sounds crass, but it actually is your best marketing tool, is to systematically, so choose 20 or 30 people, and every day, pick one of those persons and contact them somehow. It doesn't have to be a phone call, but then roughly once a quarter, make sure that you're actually on the phone with them or seeing them in person for coffee. If you don't have a network, everybody has a network. Everybody has a network. Unless you are, you know, in a jail cell, you've got a network.
Even then, a network.
Yeah, exactly. Everybody has a network of some kind. So if you are reaching out for work, then contact the people you know and find out who they know. Have them help you to get in contact with people that could be helpful to you. And what you're really trying to do is build trusted relationships.
Love that.
I like to think about it that way versus thinking about it in terms of, we call it building a network, but really it's the trusted relationships you're trying to develop.
I think we should change it to building trusted relationships, no longer building a network. I was fortunate enough to have a gentleman come into my life about 17 years ago at this point. And he did exactly what you were talking about. Systematically, I would get a phone call from him every quarter. And every time I would get a phone call from him, I would smile because I knew he was thinking about me. He never really asked me for anything other than, how are you doing? How are the kids? How's the family? But we were just building this bond. And here we are 17 years later, still great connections, if you will. And I will tell you, he has never been out of a job. He has switched jobs, but he has never, since I've known him in 17 years, not been in a job. And not only does he have one job, but he teaches in the evening for, you know, different universities. He's got his day job. He's retired from the military. So he is living quite a great life. But it's funny, it's everything you just brought up. He does systematically. And I think people underestimate the power of how important building trusted relationships really can be. And you also made a really valid point. Contacting one person a day is not difficult. Contacting 50 in a day is difficult. But one person every day for 30 days can really make a huge impact in your career. And so that's a great tip. Just one person a day. Just see how they're doing. So what about if you're introverted?
I'm introverted. And I think that's the beauty of building trusted relationships is it's not scary. It's personal. And it's not having to go to a really large meeting and facing 200 or 300 people, because for most introverts, that can be intimidating. But focusing on meeting one person and then being introduced to another person and gradually building that group of trusted people. So, and the more, I'll use the word intimate, and I think that I can safely say that. I'm not talking about sexual relationships when I say that. I'm talking about having a relationship with somebody where you feel really comfortable.
Sure, where there's trust. It makes complete sense to me. I feel like I have that with you. If I ask you something, I feel like you're going to tell me the truth.
Yeah.
I know if you call me and you say, hey, Suzanne, how's your day? I know that you're interested in hearing about my day, not just necessarily checking a box. And I believe that you can build that with individuals. I think a lot of times you brought up going into massive events, right, with 200 people. That can be overwhelming for anyone, even the most extroverted person, going into an event of 200 people that you don't know. I say this all the time. Doesn't matter if you're introverted or extroverted. Everyone, whenever they're walking into a brand new room, grabs the door to open it and takes a deep breath because you don't know what's on the other side, right? But I love the technique of walk away with one person. And what I would add to that is follow up. Do you
know,
Jane, statistically, only 20% of people follow up, which means if you just simply send an email or send a card or something, you would be ahead of 80% of the other people.
That's right. And if you meet a person and you can have a conversation that has something personal in it, where you could make a common, find common ground, make a connection, then getting in contact with those people is actually fun. It's enjoyable. It's not work.
Yeah, that's amazing. You know, now that we're even talking about this, I just realized out in my networking experiences, I actually met a friendship coach also.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, I hadn't thought about that.
She coaches women on how to make friends once they've left college because, you know, making friends once you've left college, if you've made it to a new area, can be, it can be a challenge. So this is all great. So how does LinkedIn come into your networking? Talk to me. Do you use LinkedIn?
I do use LinkedIn. And right now it needs updating. And it's important to keep it updated because our lives, our focus, our circumstances change, and it's important to keep our LinkedIn up to date because LinkedIn is where people can get to know you. It's an interesting medium because unlike Facebook, you're not going to say things that are too personal. And yet you want it to have a personal feel to it because LinkedIn is a great place for people, recruiters, HR people, to get a sense of who you are. And so you have to kind of balance that being professional with being warm and open to conversation.
Yeah, I think LinkedIn is a great place to show your passion. Where Facebook is a great place to show your life, if you will, to your friends and family or whatever. But LinkedIn really allows you to excel with your passion. And I have a customer who just recently finished our computer coach program not too long ago. And she was really passionate about running. She was laid off from an organization that had nothing to do with running. But she truly does have a passion for fitness and for running. And through LinkedIn, she was able to establish her brand and show her passion. And she actually got a job, a really great opportunity within the Ironman Association.
That's amazing. And that's interesting because that's the importance of having a really great brand and putting it out there is that I'll tell you, I have a client right now that I'm working with. And when I first read her LinkedIn, it was all over the place. She had everything in there that she had ever accomplished. And the sense is that people don't know who you are. They don't know what you want to do. They don't know what you're excited about. And so that's what we've been working on, is narrowing that down to where she has a statement that really talks about what she loves to do, where she feels like she has her greatest impact, who she loves to serve and why she loves to serve them. And it's interesting because I recently wrote a blog about this and it was short. And I said, you know, I was on the internet over the weekend and I was looking for a white button down shirt. And there were like hundreds of them out there for women. And then I went back into the browser and I put in, you know, white shirt. I want it to be long, tunic length. I want it to be linen. I want it to not have button down collar. I want it to have short sleeves. I got it all of the parameters down, and it got down to less than 10 options. What we have to realize is that recruiters and companies are using LinkedIn to find us. And they are doing that exact process. They are narrowing it down and looking for the best options for them. And if we are all over the board, they can't find us.
That is so valid. Actually, most of the talent acquisition professionals that I talk to, in some time throughout the conversation, it will come up that they use LinkedIn to see if someone's truly passionate about what they say. So if someone in an interview says, well, I'm passionate about cars, but then they go to their LinkedIn and it's all about flowers. And I know that's an extreme example, but you know, then it's going to cause a red flag in the recruiter's mind. Right. And so I think that those are valid points. And when it comes to their LinkedIn a lot of LinkedIn profiles are all over the board. In particular, if we're talking about the example of the linen shirt and really getting everything scaled down to what you're looking for, your skills section on LinkedIn. People set their skills in LinkedIn and then they never go and they update them. And as you're progressing through your career, you've added on different skills and new skills. And sometimes it's time to take out the old skills. And I could probably go into my skills section and take out some old skills and add in some new skills. But it's really important if you are actually job seeking. So I think your linen shirt example also showed how important it is to know what you want and to have a plan.
Absolutely. And the great thing about that is when you narrow that down to what you really want, then the jobs that you end up interviewing for are much more likely to be jobs that you really want. You're not, and then you know that you can excel in those jobs. And that's exciting.
That is exciting. I call those A jobs. I rank jobs as A, B, and C.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, A jobs are jobs that you want. They make you tickle on the inside. You want to call a significant other. You see it and you get excited. We've all been there, regardless of your age, right? We've all been there. And then
That's right.
C jobs are jobs you look at, you say, I could do that job. It pays well, but it's not that job that makes you excited. Then Bs are subjective, right? So I think that is great. If you know what you're looking for, you're able to really zero in on A-level jobs for yourself.
Yeah, what I often say to clients is what you really want wants you.
Now, let me ask you, what advice do you have for someone who is, I met somebody out and about, I really liked this person, thought we built some rapport, I sent them an email, but they're not communicating, they're not sending me anything back. What advice do you have for candidates if they're trying to build their network and someone's just not responding?
I guess it depends on the situation. If it's critical to getting information about a company, then you might go and talk to somebody else in the company. There are almost 8 billion people on the earth. And I always ask, why are we focusing on that one person? There are lots of ways to get into companies, make contacts with people. You don't have to feel discouraged. People are busy. And not everybody has a mindset about making connections and building their network. And so let go. Move on.
I tell my kids all the time, if friends aren't being nice, find a new friend.
Yeah, exactly. It's not the person you want to work with anyway.
That's probably very true. So what about sourcing events to do networking in? I know right now a lot of things are virtual, so not necessarily in the virtual world, but we're going back to a face-to-face world eventually, right?
Eventually.
I've often seen candidates will go to the same networking events over and over and over, and it may not be the right networking event for them. So for example, they may want to work in SQL Server, but they'll go to just general IT networking events. How can candidates assess if the networking events are successful for them? Should they try different ones? Is there a benefit to going back to the same networking event every month? How do you judge those?
Oh, that's a good question. I think if you go back every time, and every time you're there, you meet somebody who is interesting, that you make a good connection with, that, you know, that becomes that trusted person in your network, I think it's very valuable. Also, what a lot of people do is they keep going to those events, but they don't really get involved. That, in my experience, both personal and watching my other clients, is probably the most valuable thing that you can do, is not just to be standing on the edges hoping that you're going to meet somebody, but get involved in the organization. Because when you're involved in the work of the organization, then you really start to meet people, to build strong relationships. if you're in the wrong organization, it's going to be obvious because you won't make those connections, because you won't have similar interests. So you're looking for a group of people where you connect because you enjoy being there. You enjoy talking to them.
Absolutely. I think individuals who aren't doing some type of extracurricular activities or volunteer work in an organization outside of their, if you will, 9-to-5 or their main job, I think that's a dangerous move for a career. I think employers look for that. I think it tells a lot about who you are. And I think it tells a lot about your passions, which employers really want to see. And employers want passionate employees, right? They want people that love what they do. So let's talk about, we talked about networking face-to-face, but now let's talk about networking in the virtual world. Are you doing like virtual coffees with people?
What I did do is every morning I send out during the week, I send out a morning mindset. It's very short, and I had been sending it just to the people that I have already made contact with and were on my email list. And then I have a marketing coach, and I think everybody should have a coach. And she kept nudging me, and I finally started putting them out on social media. And then COVID came, and we weren't networking, and I'm on the board for WITI, Women in Technology International, and I had done a lot of my networking through that organization, and it isn't as available right now, at least at the local level. It will be, but right now it's slow. And so I started inviting people to an open call on Mondays. You know, you have a question you want to ask a coach, just come and talk to me. And then I started talking to people and finding out people who didn't have jobs right then and were really concerned about their economics. So I started a group of women who meet on Wednesdays, and we talk about, you know, what are the things that we need to know in terms, and we encourage each other and help each other make connections. So those are the kind of things that I've been doing to make virtual connections. And then there are networks like, you know, events like what you have, you know, where you can go to somebody else's event. Yesterday and today, WITI Summit is the national summit, had to go all online, and it was a lot of fun. I met people literally from all over the world yesterday. It was great fun.
It was. I was on some of the sessions yesterday as well. It was really great. And they have a great career fair also. So I hope people are taking advantage of that opportunity. So I know we talked about, as a coach, you help individuals come up with a career plan moving forward, but ultimately they have to interview, right, for their next roles.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about interviewing. And what do you tell your clients when they're preparing for an interview?
A number of years ago, we had gone through a downturn, and I decided that I might try independent consulting. Took a class on consulting, and probably the best thing that this instructor taught me, well, two best things. One was to get focused, but the other was to come up with those star stories, you know, the situation, action, and results. She had us come up with between 20 and 25 of those, and then we got with partners and we rehearsed them till we had them down cold. I will tell you that having that group of stories gave me such incredible confidence when I was interviewing, because I never had to reach for an answer. It was just right there. And they were succinct, very clear. It gave the impression that I knew what I was doing.
That's so important. We call them PAR statements as well at Computer Coach. Same exact thing, except we do problem, action, result. It's called PAR, STAR, CAR. We actually have a worksheet that our customers have access to, just to, if you want to type them in, physically write them in, whatever you want to do. But when you are interviewing, the STAR philosophy or PAR or CAR is really very valuable. Because like you said, you can recall the information and you can give situational examples of how you achieved certain things. And right now, that's what employers want, right? Employers want to know about your achievements. They don't want to know just about the tasks that you did by your position. So interviews are almost all virtual now, right? The entire process is virtual still to this point. We're starting to see it open up a little bit, but I don't really think there's many that are doing face-to-face interviews. What advice do you have for candidates to overcome the non-verbal cues that you may have in a face-to-face interview? Or even when you're networking, right? There's different non-verbal cues that you can see when you're in front of somebody. You can't necessarily see those in a virtual environment all the time. So what advice do you have for people to overcome that?
Well, that same instructor that I was just talking about always use the phrase listen to ask versus listen to respond, because that's what we normally want to do. We listen and then we think, okay, now I've got to answer the question, right? But if we will pause and listen for where the hesitation is in their conversation or their question, listen for the unspoken question that they're asking. Listening is probably one of the most critical skills we can learn at any point in our career. In fact, if you see in my book, I've been rereading a lot of books that I have on listening because it's so critical. And helping my clients to practice listening so that they can pick up on those nuances and not jump right away into what do I need to respond, but leave their mind open and hearing what the person is really saying.
Let's talk about job seekers' most uncomfortable topic, money. As an executive coach, I'm sure you must get asked the question all the time about how to bring salary up, how to negotiate salary. I know my candidates ask me the same thing. It's just overall, it's the most uncomfortable topic for job seekers is discussing money. What do you coach your clients on as far as bringing up salary, negotiating salary?
Years ago, we used to say, don't bring anything up about salary until you're absolutely sure you want the job and you're sure that they want you for the job. Don't say anything, because if you, the first dollar sign that you put out there, you are actually the loser, because they're going to negotiate you down. You can't negotiate up. It rarely happens. Most time people negotiate down. Well, that's not bad advice, but it's not what I'm hearing from my clients now. What I'm hearing is that most companies want to talk about that right up front, because they've got budgets and they know that, and they know what the wages are out in the marketplace. It's not like we don't know. And any of us can go out on the network and find out what job, people in executive levels, you can find that kind of information on the internet easily. So, and talking to other people who are working at that company, you can get a sense of what the range is so that you know if you're going to be comfortable within that range. If you don't know ahead of time when you're walking into that situation, I'm going to say that you probably haven't done your homework.
I would agree with you. And it's funny, I remember that third interview rule to discussing money. You couldn't discuss money until the third interview.
Yeah.
And that's very true. Nowadays, there's so much information on salary ranges, what companies pay. And that does seem to be what I'm hearing from my candidates, as well as everybody that I interview in the hiring process as well, that they bring it up on day one just to make sure, because people are very aware of not wasting their own time or someone else's time at this point. So let's talk about, what would you coach your client on if she was lowballed? let's say there was an A-level job for her, and then she just got the offer, and it was just completely off.
Well, I would suggest that she really look at, number one, look into the company, because it's possible that the company is having some financial difficulties, and it has nothing to do with her. And so that would be the first thing. The second thing is check in with your network and start to get a sense of what kind of jobs, and I coach primarily women, but I do coach some men, but primarily women. And I know that we're growing, we're getting better, we're evolving, but it's still common for women to end up in jobs where they may have a title that is manager, director, and above, but it can be a job that is a support type job. And support type jobs oftentimes are viewed as being an expense rather than a revenue generating. And those kind of jobs demand less money. Just be honest about it. And if women tend to be in those kind of roles in a company, that may be a company where you want to not be, because you will have less opportunity both for the financial growth, but also for your personal and your career growth. And then there, when you're on the interview, you can ask questions about the job. I'm trying to think of a specific question, but basically to ask a question that helps you understand what are the expectations of that job. So you start to get a sense of whether that is a job that is considered support role, or whether it's a job where you are expected to have some really solid impact to the bottom line of that company.
Great advice. And another tip that I got from a different interview, which I think is applicable here, and just to remind our listeners, is you can also look at individuals who have had that same role at that company on LinkedIn, and you can see, did they progress? What do they have underneath that particular title? Have they written anything about what they've done? Or you can see the career progression within that specific role on LinkedIn with other candidates who have had that role within the same organization. So I never really thought to look at profiles of people that may have had your role, but I thought that that was a great tip and it applies to here.
That's a great tip, and I'm going to steal that from you.
Please do.
That's a great one.
Yeah. Please do. So let's talk about, you coach at the executive level, right? Individuals who are in their late 40s and up, and I know you have some individuals that are in their 30s, but you really focus on helping individuals with essentially defeating ageism, right? Do you have any tips as far as their resumes go? I know you said you don't write resumes, you generally outsource that. But with candidates that you've seen be successful, it's one of the things that candidates ask a lot about, because if you are in your 50s, you probably have significant experience, right? Do you have any tips or tricks for overcoming ageism on resumes?
Well, what I've been told, and so I'll just go with that, is that resumes change all the time. And so what format you put them in changes all the time. But what seems to be happening right now, at least this is what I've been told, is that you want to put your branding statement up at the top, because you want to grab the person's attention as to who you are as a person, what's your passion, where you think you can have an impact, why you want to serve a company like the company that you're talking to, so that immediately they know that you are somebody that they want to talk to. And then you can list very specific accomplishments, results that are measurable results, and you list them. And then at the bottom, you list the companies that you work for. And you don't have to list them in any particular order. You don't have to put any dates on this. You just talk about accomplishments and the companies you've worked for.
We started talking about career planning, went into some innovative ways to source job opportunities, talked about standing out in interviews and discussing resumes. Jane, this was incredibly valuable information, resources, and tips. Thank you so much. My last question for you is, how can our listeners reach out to you if they're interested in learning more about your executive coaching services?
Thank you for asking, Suzanne. It's actually really easy. You can go to LinkedIn and connect with me. It's Jane Barr. Or you can go to my website, which is connecttoyourpower, all one string, connecttoyourpower.com. And you can sign up to receive my book, Wise Woman Leadership. It's free. Or you can sign up for my morning mindset, which is a nice little reminder every weekday morning to keep you going. And if you want to, you can contact me through LinkedIn or there. And I am very open to having a consultation with you or a coaching session. So that you, if you've never had a coach before and are wondering what that's about, then let's talk about it.
Great stuff. It's always wonderful to have a complimentary coaching session to see if that is the direction that you want to take. So there's, you know what? You have nothing to lose. So I hope our listeners take advantage of that. With that, thank you, Jane, for coming on today, spending your time with me and sharing your invaluable information with job seekers and candidates across Tampa Bay and more. So thank you.
Thank you, Suzanne. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk with everybody.
And that's a wrap for today's episode of Talent Acquisition Talks. I don't know about you, but I have some great takeaways. Good luck in your job search and feel free to reach out to us at computercoach.com if you have any questions or ideas you would like us to cover in an upcoming episode.